I'm going to begin now a blockbuster series, my reading and analysis of a blockbuster series that Harry Martin of the Napa Sentinel is doing on the Zodiac case. I will repeat once again, as I have said many times in recent months, that at this point in time, and those for those of you who hear this program on tape, it is now November 10th of 1991, Harry Martin of the Napa Sentinel, a small semi-weekly newspaper out of Napa, California, is doing the finest work of anyone working in the periodical medium at this time. In dramatic witness to that, I'm going to begin downloading as an archive show, a miscellaneous archive show, an absolutely riveting series that Harry Martin is doing, in which he is revealing the true connections, or many of the true connections, behind the Zodiac case. Now, the Zodiac killings, for those of you who are not familiar with them, is a series of supposedly random killings, mostly of women, which began some 25 years ago, and it may involve, depending on which account you read, anywhere from 40 to 80 victims. Supposedly, this was all being done by some madman called the Zodiac, who taunted law enforcement authorities with his Zodiac letters. There is abundant evidence in this Harry Martin series that not only was the Zodiac series of killings not a random series of killings at all, but on the contrary, the Zodiac killer was almost certainly the result of an organized conspiracy, probably involving more than one killer, and with very strong evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the U.S. national security establishment and or organized crime. Now, in the 1970s, the late Mae Brussel put forth her theory that many of what she called the California violences, quote-unquote, that is to say many of the bloody and shocking crimes and massacres that occurred in California under the direction, or under the governorship, I should say, Freudian slip, of Ronald Reagan in the late 1960s and 1970s, particularly during the time of the maximum amount of activism by the anti-war movement, the so-called youth culture, etc., such killings as the Manson family killings, the Zodiac killings, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and others. It was May's theory, and information is beginning to be amassed to support that theory in a big way, that these killings were not the work of lone nuts. They were not simply random killings, but rather they represented a very sophisticated form of terrorism by the U.S. national security establishment. Not only were some key and troublesome individuals being eliminated as a result of these criminals, but in turn, the crimes themselves served to terrorize the public. They served to discredit the, quote, youth culture, quote-unquote, inextricably linked with the anti-war movement in California during the late 1960s, the Zodiac killer, which had overtones of being some sort of deranged hippie, as well as the Manson killings and the Symbionese Liberation Army, did much to discredit the so-called youth culture and anti-war movement. It should also be noted that these particular killings served as a way of terrorizing the public into accepting increased police state tactics, reduced civil liberties, more prisons, more mental institutions, and generally a lower profile of constitutional liberty under the circumstances. As I've indicated, a great deal of information has amassed, some of it by Mae Brussel and other information coming to light over the years, to a certain extent at least support Mae's theories. In a miscellaneous archive show that I did called The Ultimate Evil, Satanism, Mind Control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, done in the fall of 1987 and updated several times over the years, I put forth my working hypothesis, and there's considerable evidence to support this at this point, that certain satanic cults, notably the Process Umbrella Cult, and possibly, in my opinion, the Temple of Set, have been used as fronts to either wholly or partially by elements of the U.S. national security establishment, that is to say, the intelligence services and the military, for a variety of things, including political assassination, terrorism, drug trafficking, the making of so-called snuff flicks, horrible movies in which people are actually killed, almost always in a sexual context, kiddie porn, and a number of other activities. In addition, it should be noted that Satanism is also inextricably linked with mind control, a major technique that has been developed by the world's intelligence agencies and which I explored at considerable length in Radio Free America shows 5, 6, and 7. There is also abundant evidence that some of these satanic cults have strong links to neo-Nazi elements, and some of their occult rituals go directly back to some of the occult rituals that lay at the core of Nazism. One of the things that I discussed in The Ultimate Evil was the fact that, to a considerable extent, the Nazi philosophy grew out of a pan-Germanist racist philosophy, in particular, a philosophy associated with the Thule Society, spelled T-H-U-L-E, in Germany, and also with a related organization called the Order of the New Templars in Austria, headed up by a fellow named Guido von Liszt. It should be noted that these occult origins of elements of Nazism translated directly into a very strong occult presence and fascination within the SS, Hitler's elite guard and brutal murderers, the masters of the concentration camps. Heinrich Himmler set up an entire branch of the SS, the Annenerbe, the Ancestral Research Bureau, to specifically research elements of the occult. Many of the SS occult rituals have found their way into the practices of the Temple of Set, a satanic cult which was originally based in San Francisco and headed up by Lieutenant Colonel, or then Lieutenant Colonel, Michael Aquino, a fellow who was one of the U.S. Army's top psychological warfare research efforts. In the Ultimate Evil series, we observed how there apparently are quite a few other military intelligence agents within the Temple of Set. Aquino was implicated by some of the children who had been molested in the Presidio child molestation case. He has always flatly denied any involvement in the child molestation or the molesting of some of the children in the Presidio's daycare centers. He was initially investigated by that in that capacity by the San Francisco Police Department and later by the Army's Criminal Investigative Division, but he has never been charged or convicted with that crime. He hotly denies that he was involved in any way. There is no absolute proof at this point. I have always been, frankly, less than convinced by his denials from the information that's available. In my opinion, that is a case which has yet a lot of information to disclose. However, whatever the possible involvement of Michael Aquino in any of those activities might be, there is abundant indication, or there are abundant indications, I should say, that some of these satanic cults have in fact been used by the national security establishment for a variety of different things, including, as I said, political assassination, drug trafficking, the making of pornography films, kiddie porn, snuff flicks, and a variety of other activities, as well as establishing mind control. And many of these connections, including evidentiary tributaries leading in the direction of the Presidio, home of Michael Aquino and of the child molestation cases, there are many evidentiary tributaries leading from Harry Martin's Zodiac investigation in the direction of the Presidio. And there are very serious, very dramatic indications of an institutional cover-up of the Zodiac case. So hang on to your hats, because Harry Martin's series will go to prove to a considerable extent May's suspicions concerning, that is to say, May Brussels' suspicions concerning the Zodiac killings. We're going to begin with an overview article that Harry Martin had in his Napa Sentinel of Tuesday, October 29th of 1991. Now, I want to note that this is a dizzying series of connections. The series is going to go on for some 10 or 11 articles, according to Harry. Four so far already with a massive, massive, and frankly, again, dizzying body of information. I will note for the listeners many of the highlights in this series. This particular reading will constitute the first installment of an archive show about the Zodiac case. It should be noted that I will be updating it as the developments come, and I will do my best to highlight the main points of this series and of the articles that I'm going to be reading this evening. It should be noted again that Harry Martin can be contacted at 925 Lincoln Avenue, Napa, California, 94558. Phone number 707-257-6272, 707-257-NAPA, fax number 257-3035. The Napa Sentinel, the biggest little newspaper in the world, and an organ which at this point is, to my in my opinion, invaluable for the serious investigative researcher. I seriously encourage listeners to the program to get a hold of the actual articles, because they're length and complexity do not lend themselves that well to radio. However, for the benefit of those of you who are sitting and taping, and hopefully there are many of you, I'm going to read all of these articles in the first four articles of the series. I will read them in their entirety and do my best to highlight and analyze the main points as I see them. The first article is from the Napa Sentinel of Tuesday, October 29th of 1991. This is by Harry V. Martin, copyright Napa Sentinel. Its headline is, "He the One? What Our Investigation Reveals." And this article reads, well, beginning with the introduction, "Editor's note, The Napa Sentinel was the first newspaper to publish articles relative to the search this year of a Vallejo home owned by a prime suspect in the Zodiac case. For several years, the Sentinel has been researching data from the Zodiac case. This search has been aided tremendously by various citizens and law enforcement officials in the Bay Area. Without their assistance, this article would not be possible. The article itself begins, 25 years ago this Wednesday, the first of the Zodiac murders took place in Riverside, California. There have been many theories about the Zodiac, his motives, the number of victims, and who he was. For 22 years, the Zodiac killer has thwarted law enforcement investigations. No one knows for certain how many victims have lost their lives at the hands of the Zodiac. He has claimed more than a dozen, but also indicated that many would die that might not be identified with the Zodiac. The police estimate that upwards of 46 people may have been murdered by this serial killer. It is known that the Zodiac killed people in the counties of Napa, Sonoma, Solano, San Francisco, Riverside, Stanislaus, and Contra Costa counties in California and at Lake Tahoe. But some law enforcement officials believe that the Zodiac may have killed people in other states as well. The Vallejo Police Department consider Arthur Lee Allen, A-L-L-E-N, of Vallejo, to be their prime suspect. A Vallejo judge issued a search warrant on February 21st of this year, allowing police to search Allen's home. This was the second time in 20 years that Allen's premises have been searched by the police in respect to the Zodiac case. Vallejo defense attorney William L. Beeman, B-E-E-M-A-N, claims that he knows who the Zodiac is and has called a press conference for Thursday to provide his evidence to the Bay Area media. By the way, I will interrupt to say we will cover this particular item later. A Vallejo Police Department inspector indicates that Beeman's suspect is dead. There have been other speculations concerning the Zodiac, from claims that it may have been a law enforcement official who is now dead to a man who works in a Puget Sound boatworks. There are several connecting circumstances with some Zodiac victims, and Harry is going to enumerate at great length here the connecting circumstances. Some would have to be something of an understatement. There are many, as we shall see. The circumstances described and enumerated by Harry as follows. There are things connecting the Zodiac victims, that is to say. They are almost all women. In three instances, male companions were with the women. One died and two were seriously hurt. The one lone male victim was Paul Stein, S-T-I-N-E, a San Francisco yellow cab driver. Next, the Zodiac notes refer to slaves, quote-unquote, for paradise, quote-unquote, quote-unquote, in the afterlife, a satanic characteristic. That last sentence again. The Zodiac notes refer to slaves, quote-unquote, for paradise, quote-unquote, in the afterlife, a satanic characteristic. Quote, when I die, I will be reborn in paradise, spelled P-A-R-A-D-I-C-E, and all I have killed will become my slaves, unquote, Zodiac wrote. Professors at Stanford University indicate such phrases have roots in Satan-worshipping devil cults, such as the one run in San Francisco by Anton LaVey. LaVey was associated with Colonel Aquino, the head of a satanic church. Aquino was assigned to the San Francisco Presidio. There were many associations with the San Francisco Presidio, and in my opinion, these Presidio associations are the most important, and they are indeed massive. These are some of the known factors, but what the Sentinel has learned, and which has surprised at least one former law enforcement official who has spent years working on the Zodiac case, is that another suspect has many close links to the murders. Unbeknownst to the Sentinel at the time of its investigation was the fact that its prime suspect has also been a prime suspect by the police in San Francisco and in Napa. The person's name has never been disclosed to the meeting. When the Sentinel presented the evidence and the name to a former law enforcement official, he proclaimed that the man remains a prime suspect in the Zodiac case. Here are some of the links. The Sentinel subject lived in a house bordering the Presidio and located at the exact location a San Francisco cab driver's log listed as a destination. Next, the message left by the killer of Sherry Joe Bates in Riverside included the initials R.H., which matches the initials of the Sentinel subject. Remember the name Sherry Joe Bates. We'll be coming back to it. Next, the deciphered code of the Zodiac indicates his first name is Robert, the same as the Sentinel suspect. The Zodiac said a cryptogram of 13 characters, which he says spell out his name. The Sentinel subject uses 13 characters in his name and signs all documents with a six-letter first name, an initial, and a six-letter second name. The symbol shows the repeat of one set of three characters and two sets of two characters, all equal to the Sentinel's suspect's name. The Zodiac used lyrics from the Mikado, that's spelled M-I-K-A-D-O. The Sentinel subject not only starred in the Mikado in school, he starred in the role from which the lyrics quoted by the Zodiac came. The Sentinel suspect owned property or was associated with an organization that owned property in which victims were found on or near. These include property at Lake Berryessa, Clayton in Contra Costa County, Sonoma County, Vallejo, and San Francisco, as well as a close association to the Riverside murder. The Sentinel subject knew at least four of the victims. A few of the victims had financial dealings with a financial institution associated with the Sentinel subject. Documents showing the Sentinel's handwriting closely matched samples of the Sentinel subject's handwriting. The material was extracted from the subject's garbage cans and employment file. The physical features of the Zodiac match the physical features of the Sentinel subject. The symbol used by the Zodiac is not a Zodiac symbol, but the symbol of a gun sight, and its clue reflects the Zodiac's last name. His notes to the newspapers and police also contain his last name on several occasions, but have been overlooked. A deciphered anagram, which police interpreted as giving the name Robert Emmett the Hippie, was a clue left by the Zodiac. There is a statue in Golden Gate Park of Robert Emmett, spelled E-M-M-E-T, and at the time of the Zodiac notes, many San Francisco hippies frequently gathered near it. The possible significance of that statue is that it is close to an organization associated with the Sentinel subject, the same organization which owned property near or on which murdered victims were found. I would also interject, this would tend to cast aspersions by associations on the thriving hippie movement, quote-unquote, that was going on in San Francisco at the time. Continuing, Zodiac also referred to the 1932 movie The Most Dangerous Game and styled some of his patterns after the movie. The book describes the Sentinel subject's last name, which embodies the role of Leslie Banks in the movie. One law enforcement official presented with the evidence stated, quote, "All the circumstantial evidence fits perfectly," unquote. Though this man has been a prime suspect in the case, his fingerprints don't match, law enforcement officials state. But what fingerprints? The San Francisco police indicate that fingerprints were left at the scene of the Paul Stein murder in San Francisco. Stein was murdered on Saturday, October 11th, 1969. On November 9th, 1969, 29 days later, the Zodiac wrote to the San Francisco Chronicle, quote, "As of yet, I have left no fingerprints behind me, contrary to what the police say," unquote. In describing the Stein murder, Robert Graysmith wrote in his book Zodiac, quote, "Particles of unburned powder exploded about the breech of the weapon, peppering the gloved hands of the attacker," unquote. The Zodiac also indicated in his letter to the Chronicle, quote, "In my killings, I wear transparent fingertip guards. All it is two coats of airplane cement coated on my fingertips, quite unnoticeable and very effective." There then follows a description of the victims of the Zodiac Killer, or at least some of them, and the circumstances under which they were killed. One of the first victims here is worth noting, a woman named Sherry Jo Bates, or Cherry Jo Bates, C-H-E-R-I. A couple of the names to remember are some of the key names, Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday. The single most important name to remember is Darlene Ferrin, last name F-E-R-R-I-N, and also the aforementioned Paul Stein, the cab driver. As we will see, all of these people, all of these people are connected to each other and or to the Sentinel suspect, excuse me. Returning to the Sentinel, 10/29/91. Sherry Jo Bates was killed on October 30th, 1966, in Riverside. She was a close friend of a female relative of the Sentinel subject and lived about 1.5 blocks away. Bates was supposed to go to the library with the friend. She was found dead with a note signed with the initials R.H., quote-unquote. The friend left school the next day and did not attend Bates's funeral. Her car, that is to say the female relative of the Sentinel suspect, her car was seen parked at Washington and Maple several years later in the same location where Paul Stein was murdered. And I would add, we'll hear where Paul Stein was murdered. That was near the Presidio. Continuing. Betty Lou Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, and David Faraday, F-A-R-A-D-A-Y, were known to Darlene Ferrin, F-E-R-R-I-N. They were killed on December 20th, 1968, near Hunter's Villas in Vallejo, property associated with the Sentinel subject. Darlene Ferrin knew her killer. In fact, the man she feared had followed her and met with her on several occasions. She told a friend, quote, "I guess he's checking up on me again. I heard he was back from out of state. He doesn't want anyone to know what I saw him do. I saw him murder someone," unquote. This man may have been assisting Darlene financially because of her expensive clothes and funds she used to purchase a house. She banked at the same institution the Sentinel subject is associated with. She was murdered near the spot that Jensen and Faraday were killed. She was shot on July 5th, 1969, again near Hunter's Villas in Vallejo, property associated with the Sentinel subject. Darlene Ferrin's first husband was associated with the San Francisco Presidio. I will also indicate later on, or Harry indicates, I should say, and I will read, that Darlene Ferrin and a number of other people, including Paul Stein and another victim of the Zodiac, and the suspect all lived in a rooming house in San Francisco that was close to the Presidio. So note that Darlene Ferrin's first husband was associated with the San Francisco Presidio. Continuing, Cecilia Shepherd was stabbed repeatedly at Lake Berryessa on September 27, 1969. The attack took place near property owned by the Sentinel subject at Lake Berryessa. Paul Stein, S-T-I-N-E, the cab driver, was murdered on October 11, 1969 at Washington and Cherry Streets. His log sheet showed a destination of Washington and Maple Street. Though the Sentinel subject lived at that location at the time, the property was owned by an organization that the Sentinel subject was prominently associated with. This is also right by the Presidio. Kathleen Johns, J-O-H-N-S, survived an attack on March 22, 1970 by the Zodiac on Highway I-5 in Stanislaus County. The Sentinel subject owns property in Patterson near the site of Johns' narrow escape. Donna Lass, L-A-S-S, was murdered on September 26, 1970 at Lake Tahoe. The Sentinel subject not only owned property near where the victim was found, but he also had an association with Lass when she was a nurse in Santa Barbara. The Cottage Hill Hospital in Santa Barbara was closely associated with the Sentinel subject's father, who died there. Lass worked in the Presidio at Letterman Hospital. There were many murders of young women in Sonoma County. In fact, most of the Zodiac's victims had the same facial and hair features. These murders took place in 1972 and 1974. They included 12-year-old Maureen Sterling and 13-year-old classmate Yvonne Weber. Their bodies were found near Bolinas Lagoon. 24-year-old Marie Antoinette Ancy, A-N-T-S-E-Y, was found dead in Lake County. Lori Cursa, K-U-R-S-A, and Carolyn Davis were also victims. There was also 15-year-old Yvonne Quillantang, Q-U-I-L-A-N-T-A-N-G. And I would interject here that I'm not sure about the pronunciation of that last name. Continuing, the bodies of four of these victims were found near or on the Sentinel subject's property or property associated with the organization this subject had prominence in. The subject owned property and a ranch throughout Sonoma County, just a few miles from each of the sites the victims were found at. The Sentinel maintains copies of deeds of trust, sample signatures, personnel file information, death certificates, school yearbook, and other associated materials to substantiate this article. Though the Sentinel subject is a prime suspect in the case and by law can be named, the Sentinel is forwarding copies of this material and article to the subject prior to publication of his name. The subject will have an opportunity to respond and or respond to and or refute the material. The Sentinel subject's last name appears at least three times in this article. The Sentinel subject is not Allen of Vallejo. The Sentinel subject now lives in San Francisco and has during most of the period of the Zodiac killings. He did live briefly in Southern California at the times of the Bates murder. And there is also, beside this, and I'm going to go back over some of the highlights of that article, of this article, there is a comparison of handwriting samples of the Zodiac and the Sentinel suspect over two decades. Begins with the letter I, and they are very close. The letter T, small t, the letter S, the letter N, the letter D, the letter E, and also the word school, and the remarkable similarity could not be overlooked under the circumstances. One of the points that is very central here to the work that Harry has done, in my opinion, are the numerous connections to the Presidio. Now, bear in mind, in the aforementioned miscellaneous archive show called The Ultimate Evil, Satanism, Mind Control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, the Temple of Set figured prominently in my analysis of certain intelligence, or certain satanic cults as intelligence fronts. And in addition to noting the many connections to the Presidio, Harry Martin has delineated some of them, and I'm going to touch on those now. The Sentinel subject lived in a house bordering the Presidio and located at the exact location a San Francisco cab driver's log listed as a destination. And it should also be noted that Sherry Jo Bate, there are numerous other connections between the numerous other evidentiary tributaries and numerous other significant intersections. For the present purposes, as we will see later, I'm going to focus on the Presidio connections. Sherry Jo Bates was killed on October 30th, 1966, in Riverside. She was found dead with a note signed with the initials R.H., and she was friendly with a female relative of the Sentinel suspect and did not attend Bates' funeral. Her car was seen parked, that is to say, the female relative of the suspect, was seen parked at a Washington and Maple Street intersection several years later in the same location where Paul Stein was murdered. It should be noted, again, skipping down, the Darlene Ferrin, perhaps the single most important name here, again spelled F-E-R-R-I-N, her first husband was associated with the San Francisco Presidio. And skipping down yet again, it should be noted that Paul Stein was found murdered at an area near the Presidio and that he showed a destination of Washington and Maple Street. It should be noted, too, that Donna Lass, another of the victims, although she was murdered at Lake Tahoe, she worked in the Presidio at Letterman Hospital. These are some of the Presidio, the evidentiary tributaries leading in the direction of the Presidio. There are others, and I believe that in light of some of the occult connections here, these are central. We're now going to continue with the next of the Sentinel's articles on the Zodiac Killer. And by the way, I want to reiterate that there are an awful lot of connections here. This is complicated and a bit dizzying. I'm going to go over, after reading the fourth article, the central connections here. Harry's next article on the Zodiac killing appeared in the Napa Sentinel on Friday, November 1st of 1991. This story also is copyright by Harry Martin. It's headlined, Zodiac Links, New Evidence Indicates Victims, Zodiac Knew Each Other, Not Random Killings, and the article reads as follows. What has eluded police investigators for years in the Zodiac case is the linkage of victims. In many cases, the police have looked at the murders as a random pattern of unrelated victims. There is a definite link between the victims of the Zodiac. They and he knew each other, and the murders were clearly related. Sherry Jo Bates, once again her first name C-H-E-R-I, who was murdered in Riverside on October 30th of 1966, was not only known by the Sentinel suspect, but also was known by Cecilia Shepherd, who was murdered at Lake Berryessa on September 27th, 1969. Both lived in Southern California. Darlene Ferrin, who was murdered in Vallejo on July 5, 1969, knew Paul Stein, a yellow cab driver from San Francisco, who was murdered on October 11, 1969. Darlene also knew Betty Lou Jensen, who was murdered in Vallejo on December 20, 1968. I would add, she also knew David Faraday as well, as we will see later on, although that's not in this particular article at this point. Continuing, Donna Lass, L-A-S-S, who was murdered on September 26th of 1970, was closely associated with the Sentinel Zodiac suspect. The Sentinel has learned that Darlene Ferrin was a frequent passenger in Stein's cab, and they lived in the same complex in San Francisco. She was working for the telephone company at the time. Ferrin apparently had threatened the Zodiac with exposure for a murder he allegedly had committed. She indicated that a story about the Zodiac would be published on July 5th. Ferrin was killed early on July 5th. Ferrin also apparently received a large sum of money from the Zodiac, estimated at $25,000, which she used to purchase her house. Ferrin also had banking contacts in San Francisco with the Sentinel subject. When Darlene's family were provided photographs of the Sentinel subject late Thursday, they did indicate the subject was familiar to them. The youngest sister of Darlene immediately picked out the subject from three different pictures of three different men. The older sister did not make a positive identification, but indicated the subject was known to her and to her father. At the time of Bates' murder, records show that the Sentinel suspect filed an absentee ballot with the Registrar of Voters in San Francisco. He had indicated he was going to be in Southern California at the time of the election, which coincided with the time of Bates' death in Riverside. Records also show that at the time the Sentinel subject sold his house in San Francisco, Lass resigned her Southern California nursing position. She took a job at Letterman Hospital in San Francisco, just blocks away from the Sentinel subject. With these links, the motive for the killings could be that Farron had witnessed the killing of Bates in Riverside and was ready to expose the murderer. Various other people may have had similar knowledge, and they were all systematically killed, not randomly, as theorized for 25 years. Well, these killings are going to be, and these connections are going to be delineated later on in the series. Take note here, first of all, by the way, this other Zodiac case refers to this fellow Beeman. I'm going to touch on that later. But take note of the names Darlene Farron and Paul Stein. Those are very important names, and we're going to be coming back to those in a big way later. The next Harry Martin article in this series appeared on Tuesday, November 5th of 1991. This is an article by Harry V. Martin. It's headlined, Zodiac Hoax. Some murders were not the work of a madman. They were deliberate. And the article reads as follows. Once again, copyright Napa Sentinel. The focus of any investigation on the Zodiac murders must center on Darlene Farron, who is reported to be the fourth victim of the serial killer. Farron, more than any other victim, knew most of the victims the police have identified in the Zodiac case. The key to unlocking the 25-year-old Zodiac mystery can be found in the activities of Farron. Once again, Darlene Farron really is the key here, F-E-R-R-I-N, her last name. At least one law enforcement investigator of the Zodiac has admitted that the search for the Zodiac killer never focused on the victims and their backgrounds. Believing the Zodiac to be a random serial killer, police never sought to determine if any of the victims were related. If the victims had a relationship with each other, it would indicate that the Zodiac was not a crazy, wanton killer, but a person who killed his victims to prevent them from revealing information. The Zodiac letters did not appear until after Farron was killed, yet Farron was killed in 1969. The first victim linked to the Zodiac was murdered in 1966, and two more in 1968. Why the delay in claiming credit for the murders? The first phone call the police received from the Zodiac was after Farron's murder. There were no phone calls associated with the other three murders. Farron also apparently knew her assailant, according to several witnesses, including Michael Magoo, M-A-G-E-A-U, who was shot alongside of Farron on July 4th, 1969. Remember the name Michael Magoo. It's important. Shot along with Darlene Farron, but he survived. Continuing with the story, numerous reports refer to a man in middle age wearing horn-rimmed glasses and driving a white vehicle as the man Farron was afraid of, who had come to her home and to her place of work frequently. A man she drove around at least once, and a man who attended a house painting party, though he was not invited. He was the man Farron said she saw kill a man. He was the man who brought her boxes of material, silver buckets, and perhaps thousands of dollars. Farron is the key to solving the Zodiac murders, but she is also the key to proving that the Zodiac was a hoax. He was not a random killer. He killed for a purpose. Farron knew too much. She had apparently witnessed a murder, and because she was always meeting with this man and arguing with him, and he was bringing her packages, she and he had some kind of arrangement. Farron admitted to being afraid of him, yet she still associated with him. He sat outside her home on numerous occasions. He ate strawberries at Terry's, where she worked. She did not want any of her family talking with this man. He was too dangerous. The man wore a medical alert bracelet and was ambidextrous, smoked Pall Mall cigarettes, and wore horn-rimmed glasses. On the night of her murder, Farron had an argument with this man in a restaurant parking lot, and, according to Magoo, the man followed them in his white car. Magoo, it must be noted, has changed his story many, many times. He is in hiding and has been hiding for over 20 years, though it is believed that he is living in Southern California. Magoo apparently knows who the killer is, though he has not provided the information to the police. Farron also knew Paul Stein very well, according to Farron's family. They both lived in a boarding house in San Francisco in late 1966. Stein apparently drove Farron around San Francisco frequently. She worked at Pacific Telephone in San Francisco in 1966. Stein drove a yellow cab. Farron was murdered on July 4, 1969. Stein was murdered October 11, 1969, 99 days later. Farron was murdered by a man matching the description of the man who is believed to have killed Stein. What must be learned is the full lifestyle of Farron. That last sentence again, because it's a key. What must be learned is the full lifestyle of Farron. This Sentinel investigation will show the trails and the threads of the victims and how they link directly to the Zodiac. This series will answer some of the following questions. Was Farron associated with a satanic cult? Was the murder of Sherry Jo Bates on October 30, 1966, associated with what she had witnessed at a satanic ritual? Was Farron blackmailing the Zodiac because she was a witness to a murder? What connection does Crocker Bank have with the Zodiac case? Did Farron see a man hacked to pieces and stabbed? Is there more than one Zodiac? Did the Zodiac take credit for murders he did not commit in order to cover up his real motives for at least five murders? Was drug money and prostitution money being laundered and linked to the Zodiac? What is the link between all the victims? Was the murder of Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday in Vallejo on December 20th, 1968, really a Zodiac murder? Why did the Zodiac only start to claim credit for murders after Farron and not before? What role did the Vallejo Police Department have in the slayings of Jensen and Faraday? Why was the door handle missing on Farron's car at the scene of the crime, and how did it get back on the car in the secured police impound facility? This last question again. Why was the door handle missing on Farron's car at the scene of the crime, and how did it get back on the car in the secured police impound facility? Why was there only an ambulance driver and no medic in the Farron-Magot shootings? Very important here because there are some extreme irregularities indicating institutional involvement. Were two people involved in the shooting of Jensen and Faraday and not just a single gunman? Why was the door handle rigged in the Farron-Magot shootings and by whom? Did Farron reveal to the police the information she had on the Zodiac before her killing? What was the really big news story Farron expected to be in the newspapers a day after her killing, which did not appear? Why have the police denied having a voice tape of the Zodiac after the Farron killing? Did a marijuana ring in Vallejo have anything to do with the Jensen-Faraday murders? Was a Vallejo police officer involved in the Kathleen Johns kidnapping on March 22, 1970 in Stanislaus County? Was the Process Satanic Coven involved in the Zodiac case? That, of course, was one of the main elements in the Ultimate Evil series that is available from archives on audio. How did the Zodiac stab Cecilia Shepherd and Brian Hartnell at Lake Berryessa on September 27, 1969, write the dates of other murders on their car, and a phone from the Napa car wash without getting blood anywhere? How did the Zodiac get to Napa in 30 minutes after the Berryessa stabbings? Are the Sonoma County murders related to the Zodiac, or is there another killer? If the Zodiac did not kill Jensen and Faraday, how was he able to describe in detail the scene of the crime? Why is Magot constantly changing his name and moving? What were the common denominators between the victims? These and hundreds of other questions will be carefully explored and answered in this new series. It will conclude with hard evidence in the Zodiac case that has never been presented or never been printed before. How can the Sentinel succeed while others have failed for over 25 years? The Sentinel used four approaches not used by the various law enforcement agencies. First, it searched records to determine the physical location of bodies to lure victims rather than the Zodiac. Third, it explored the backgrounds of known Zodiac suspects and attempted to find any linkage between them and the victims. Fourth, it has networked with people who have been investigating the Zodiac for years, comparing their notes, theories, and evidence. As one law enforcement official said, he welcomes a fresh approach to an old investigation. Well, there is a lot to bite on in this particular article. Obviously, Harry is foreshadowing many of the key questions and contradictions in the official version of the case that will be figuring in the later articles. There appear to be some extreme irregularities in the way law enforcement has handled some of the killings. There are several indications of possible satanic involvement, I should say, including a question concerning the process satanic coven. There is a question of drug smuggling here, a marijuana ring, in Vallejo. And there is also a question of drug money and prostitution money being laundered and linked to the Zodiac. There are a lot of contradictions in the official versions of the story, and Harry obviously has highlighted many of them in this foreshadowing of the articles to come, and we'll be exploring those at considerable length. I'm going to take a short musical break, and then we're going to come back with Article 4 in Harry's series. I will be analyzing this in depth and in detail because it really begins to get into the Darlene Farren situation, and she is in many ways the key to the investigation of the Zodiac. Music, and then more about Darlene Farren more about Darlene Farren of any ties. Second, it explored the history of